Welcome to the Chilean Sea Blob Podcast. In each episode, I'll share a previously published short fiction written by me, Theodore Carter. The stories will slither in and out of genre distinctions, but will consistently stay weird. Now, let's get started with today's story.
The Unwrapping Party. Half-frozen slush fell from the night sky and a layer of ice spread over the windshield. Robin watched Neil lean close to the glass and flip the wipers on and off. He squinted behind his glasses' thick lenses. "Jesus," Neil said. "The Miltons picked a hell of a night." "We're almost there," Robin said. The dashboard clock showed they were 20 minutes late. She picked at the label on the bottle of wine she held in her lap. When she noticed what she'd done, she smoothed it out. "If I die on the drive over, make sure I'm buried so deep no one can pick me apart at a dinner party in 3,000 years," said Neil. "You know you're curious, Neil," said Robin. He furrowed his brow as if to make a quip, but said nothing. He'd voiced his opposition at home, and Robin had said it was too late. She'd already told the Miltons they would go. Robin pulled down the vanity mirror and brushed her bangs to the side with her fingertips. Sometimes her hair fell over her face, making her look like a St. Bernard. Meredith Milton had her hair styled weekly. It always looked perfect. "Mummies are things to see in museums or on the Discovery Channel. They're not dinner party entertainment." Neil leaned forward again, his eyes inches from the glass. He raised his upper lip, exposing his teeth. Hail bounced off the roof of the car in front of them. "It used to be common in London, wealthy sophisticates, not unlike ourselves, would throw a party and unwrap a mummy. There are bracelets, pendants, all sorts of treasures hidden inside. They also used to charge admission to look at the freaks in the mental hospitals," he said. "We're doing that next weekend," Robin said. Robin had dressed Neil in a white shirt, no tie, and a gray sport jacket. The men at the country club dressed this way, though the clothes didn't hang right on Neil's narrow, hunched shoulders. "Where'd she get it again?" Neil asked. Robin could barely see through the windshield, and she wondered how Neil could carry on a conversation while driving. "Said her granddaddy picked it up. Used to be, in Victorian England, they sold them on the street corners like soft pretzels." "It's pretty weird, Robin," he said. "Well, you know how she is." Seated across from Robin at a coffee shop, Meredith had talked loudly about the mummy. Others had turned their heads. Meredith seemed not to notice. She kept on talking, fingering her pearl necklace, legs crossed, white tennis shoe bouncing in the air. "For God's sakes," Meredith had said, "you look like you've caught me smoking in the girls' room." After her loud declaration, several men in line looked over at them, and Robin found it titillating. "The Bennets are coming, too." "Yes, the Stevensons and the Bennets," Meredith added. Robin liked the way the genteel names sounded and was ashamed of how glad she was to be done with her maiden name. "Here we are," Neil said. "The Miltons' mansion." "Are you sure?" asked Robin. She ran her tongue over her teeth in case of lipstick. "Yep, 7132, right here." He pointed to the numbers tacked onto the mailbox that only Neil, with his fondness for minutia, would ever see or think to look for. An elaborate black metal gate with an M woven into the ironwork guarded the driveway. The gate magically opened. Neil looked at Robin and raised an eyebrow. The house itself looked like a parody of where the filthy rich lived. Red brick with white trim, a large circular driveway, and hedges sculpted into neat cubes. Four columns rose from the front porch. This was old money, something about which dot-com millionaires like Robin and Neil knew nothing. Jack opened the door himself and let out a boisterous, "Good evening!" Having celebrated his 50th birthday the summer before, Jack was a good 10 years older than Robin, Neil, and Meredith. Each time Robin saw Jack, he looked taller and fatter, as if he'd grown between encounters. The red hue of his bulbous nose appeared to also have deepened. Jack would likely hand Neil a few drinks throughout the evening, and Robin made careful note of Neil dropping his car keys into his jacket's right pocket. Robin handed Jack the bottle of wine. "For you." "Aha," Jack said, holding the bottle at eye level and studying the label. Robin wanted to know whether the exclamation meant he approved of her selection, but Jack simply took their coats and said, "Pretty hellish out there, isn't it?" The sound of falling ice rattled against the Milton's brick fortress. "It's the mummy's curse," Meredith said as she entered the foyer. She wore a loose-fitting white linen dress with full-length sleeves and carefully torn fringe at the hem. "Do you like it?" she asked, holding out her arms and twirling. "I thought it was appropriately ghastly." The slit up the side exposed her pale, thin legs and made Robin realize that Meredith was past her prime. Robin gave her dinner party giggle. "You look absolutely macabre." "Yes, well, Mare is very excited. She spent the whole week researching mummies and coming up with reasons why it's okay to destroy one," Jack said. "Well, it is Granddaddy's mummy," Meredith said, hands on her hips, a debutante pout. "You're absolutely right, dear," Jack said. He gave Neil a jovial slap on the shoulder. Then, leaning close, he said, "I'd rather think of all that's wrong with it and do it anyway." Jack gave Neil a wink, then straightened to address them all. "Who wants a drink?" He'd led them into the parlor, where they sat in large leather chairs, cocktails in hand, scotch for Jack, cranberry and vodka for Meredith and Robin, and a rum and coke with lots of lime for Neil. When the phone rang, Meredith rushed to the kitchen to answer it. She returned and said, "That was the Bennetts. They can't come. All the street lights are out over there, and Nebraska Avenue is shut down. It took them a half hour just to drive to the end of their block and then turn around again and go home." "What a shame," said Robin, trying to sound sincere. "Yes, it really is," said Meredith. She paused for a moment, looking past them all. Jack rattled his ice cubes. "Well, let's quit waiting and eat," he said. He stood up. The others followed him into the spacious dining room, lit by candles held in an array of candelabra. In the dim, flickering light, oil paintings looked like hollow portraits encased in glistening frames. A deep, red-colored tablecloth covered the oak table. In place of wine glasses, silver goblets sat beside each setting. Neil said, "No dry ice?" Jack guffawed. "I'm telling you, she went overboard." "I like it," Robin said. "It's like Halloween." "It's better than Halloween," Meredith said. "It's the dead of winter." "Yes, it was a dark and stormy night," said Robin. "It's deader, colder, icier," said Meredith. "Well, I have to admit, you've got me going," Neil said. "A few more minutes listening to you, a couple more goblets of wine, and I'll be ready to uncover the mysteries of the mummy." "We're having Eye of Newt as an appetizer, followed by a generous serving of seasoned bat wings," Jack said. "Oh, shush," Meredith said to her husband, waving her hand. Turning to her guests, she continued, "We're having Cornish game hens with roasted potatoes. I had Rosie cook them before she left for the evening, so don't thank me. They're just heating up in the oven." Meredith went to the kitchen and emerged with plates of food, which she set in front of her guests. Neil worked at his hen like he was lifting toothpicks with a pair of tweezers. Robin was fairly certain he'd never eaten Cornish game hen. Small bones hid within the meat and carefully seasoned skin. Robin found the taste pleasant enough, though hardly worth the effort. "Rosie, this dinner is just divine," Meredith said to no one. "It is very good," Robin said. Neil looked quizzically at his plate, then took a sip of wine. Next, he paused, his expression frozen as if he were suddenly struck by a bad memory. The action was so noticeable, it required comment. "A goose walk over your grave?" Meredith asked. Robin tried to think of something to say to draw attention away from Neil. Jack, his mouth full of potatoes, did it for her. "For Christ's sakes, Mare," he said. "Let the man eat his bird." He smiled at Robin while chewing and held his fork upright as if preparing to bang its butt on the tabletop. Robin couldn't decide whether to be repulsed or impressed by the masculine, grease-smacking noises Jack made while chewing. His manner held a ridiculous macho appeal. "I do have to admit, Meredith, this atmosphere you've created is quite extraordinary. If there was ever an environment that would make me want to pick apart the dead, this is it," Neil said. Robin gave him a scolding look. "Why, thank you, darling," Meredith said. "This isn't an everyday occurrence for us. I had to go all out. I had to invite our most ghoulish friends." Robin smiled too deeply and looked down at her plate. After dinner, Meredith led them to the attic, with one of the garish candelabrum. Her Morticia Adams-style dress flowed behind her on the stairway. Exposed wooden beams and a tall, peaked ceiling gave the attic a spacious feel. In the center of the space, a table had been erected using sawhorses and a flat board. What Robin presumed to be a mummy lay covered by a white sheet. "Ah, I see you've arranged a grand unveiling," Neil said. "Oh, of course, dear," Meredith said. "This is a magnificent event." Strewn about the deep crevices of the attic were generations of dead Milton's discards. Old furniture, some shrouded in white cloth, and cardboard boxes befittingly covered with dust made Robin feel as though even the disarray had been carefully arranged. A floor lamp in the corner lit the room. Meredith had draped an elaborate red and gold cloth over the lampshade so that it cast an eerie glow across the mummy's white covering. Meredith placed her candelabrum on an old wicker table. She walked over to the body with her arms extended and legs stiff at the knee, mocking the limited mobility of the monster movie mummy. Her white dress helped. Upon reaching the table, she grabbed the sheet between her thumb and forefinger and said, "Ladies and gentlemen, this evening we are going to discover things no one has seen for thousands of years. This is not for the faint of heart. You may be disgusted by the look of death upon this ancient face. You may be awestruck by the beautiful relics of a grand civilization. You may encounter something you never predicted, never could have imagined. The mysteries awaiting inside this mummy are unknown to all of us." Purposely theatrical, Meredith's speech quieted her audience. Robin certainly believed the endeavor required a certain amount of austerity. Outside, sleet pattered against the roof like dirt atop a coffin. Within the attic, the candelabrum's light flickered and cast quick-moving shadows across faces. Meredith lifted the sheet like a magician unveiling a woman sawed in half. The sarcophagus was small, a little over 5 feet long. Chipped paint on the exterior made it appear more authentic than a well-preserved museum piece. The painted figure's large round eyes seemed out of proportion, almost cartoonish. Jewels had been painted on the wood using dull yellow instead of royal gold. Until this point, it hadn't occurred to Robin that in addition to mummifying pharaohs, ancient Egyptians had preserved commoners. "Give me a hand, Neil," Jack said. He and Neil lifted the top half of the sarcophagus and placed it against the wall next to the Milton's discarded furniture. Next, they lifted the body out of the sarcophagus well and laid it on the table. They moved the sarcophagus off the table so only the body lay atop the sheet. Strips of thick cloth coiled around the body to form a cocoon. Together, Jack and Neil removed the outer layer of the wrapping until the outline of a human body took shape. "Is it a man or a woman?" asked Robin. The mummy's sunken eyes and the small bridge of its nose looked as if sculpted from clay. The mouth had been left uncovered, something Meredith said was abnormal, and its teeth were fully intact, giving the impression it was capable of speech. "I don't know. It could be either, or perhaps neither, like Akhenaten," Meredith said. Robin considered Meredith's comment akin to name-dropping at a cocktail party. "What does it feel like?" asked Robin. Jack stood staring at the mummy. Neil answered, "Kind of like dried clay. It's chalky, but it reminds you of once having been wet." "Like the chalk lines on a baseball field," Jack added. Neil nodded, but Robin knew he'd never been close to a baseball field. "You can touch it," Meredith said. "Go ahead." Robin reached for the corpse's skull. She found a loose bandage end and unraveled a piece that had been looped around the forehead. As she pulled the cloth from the ancient body and made a ripping sound, she stopped. "Should I keep going?" Meredith shooed her on with a flick of her wrist. Jack reached over to hold the mummy's head off the table, and Robin slowly unwrapped the bandage. Just 5 long strips covered the skull, and once they'd been removed, the body looked horrifically human. Gray skin lay tight against the bone, and long wisps of wiry black hair clung to the scalp. Robin knew she'd have to be careful not to let the brittle neck snap as she continued. Neil stood over the table staring at the mummy's face as if in a trance. "What should I do with these?" Robin asked, holding up the bandages. Meredith shrugged, and Robin dropped them at her feet. Their voices and bodies were still, and the silence made the heavy beating of hail sound as if it were mocking the quiet within the house. Then Robin said, "Neil, you should try it." Neil was squeamish, but she wanted him to appear eager. Neil gave her a fake, knowing smile and took hold of the mummy's right hand. The mummy's knotty finger joints looked like fruit tree branches. Robin wondered if Neil recognized the similarity and whether it made his task easier. As he tore a bandage on the mummy's thumb, a puff of dust rose and the rigid body creaked. Neil dropped the mummy's hand and jolted backwards. Robin glanced over at Jack, who covered a smile with his hand. Neil didn't look up. He grasped the shriveled hand again and continued unwrapping the thumb, then the forefinger, then the middle finger. He worked with delicacy around the shriveled paw's digits, brow furrowed, and his head bowed close to his working fingers. This is how he looked when rebuilding the gadgetry inside his computers. Neil found the group's first relic, an elaborate gold ring with diamond studs along its edges. Still on the dead hand, the gem refracted the red glow of the lamplight. Ned pulled the ring off the lifeless knuckle and held it in front of his face. "It looks like it could have come wrapped in a Tiffany's box," Robin said. "No tarnish, no scratches." Jack took it from Neil and held it to the light. "This is a real beauty. What do you think of that, love?" Jack said. Meredith turned pale, her mouth agape. Robin noticed her fingering the diamond pendant around her neck, her gaze fixed on the ring. "What is it, Mare?" Jack asked. "That's not an Egyptian ring." "Of course it is. How else would the mummy come to wear it?" Jack said. "The Egyptians didn't have diamonds like that," Meredith said. "Well, this guy did," Jack said, pointing to the mummy. Robin and Neil leaned close to Jack, and he opened his hand to give them a look at the ring. The gold band twisted around itself in an elaborate serpentine design. Finely cut diamonds, arranged with laser-like symmetry, spanned the length of the band. The edges had been faceted with exactness impossible to achieve by hand, and though reluctant to give credence to Meredith's flabbergasted reaction, Robin also began to wonder whether this was indeed an ancient artifact. Robin knew Meredith would go to great lengths to heighten the notoriety of her dinner parties. An expert could have been called in to make things appear authentic, to age the bandages. But the surprise on Meredith's face seemed authentic. Robin next imagined the ring had perhaps been a gift from an old lover, that Jack had discovered Meredith's affair and somehow stuffed the ring into the mummy. However, Jack looked unaffected by the ring's appearance. If he'd been watching a sinister plan come to fruition, he'd have shown some satisfaction. Robin remembered a lunch date with Meredith at Casa del Taco when, after a couple margaritas, Meredith had swiped the metallic cowboy napkin holder from the table and stuffed it into her purse. "A little souvenir from our afternoon," she said with a drunken smile. Robin had been astonished and could think of nothing to say. She'd forced a smile. Months later, she saw the Tex-Mex centerpiece on the dining room table at Meredith's Cinco de Mayo party. "I picked it up last spring in New Mexico," Robin had overheard Meredith tell a guest. Maybe this ring was a greater indiscretion, an item Meredith pocketed while the clerks at Tiffany's circled about behind the counter. Maybe it belonged to another matron among Washington's elite. There'd been a fundraiser, a party of some sort, and while the hostess entertained guests in the downstairs dining room, Meredith had been upstairs under the guise of using the powder room. She'd gone into the hostess's bedroom and rifled through her jewelry box. Robin imagined Jack driving Meredith home, the couple recapping the party and all the shortcomings, while Meredith reached into her purse and ran her fingertips over the salacious diamonds. Robin took the ring from Jack. "It's really quite extraordinary," she said. She turned and saw Meredith wide-eyed. Slowly, Meredith reached over the decrepit body and took the ring from Robin. She placed it at the foot of the mummy. "Why don't we see what else is under here?" Meredith said. Her eyes looked down and the tendons in her neck showed distinctly as she swallowed. "Well, I suppose we can divvy up the booty at the end of the evening," Robin said. Her sonorous voice had the desired effect of alleviating some of the weight that had fallen over the group. Meredith also acted the part. "Jack, honey, why don't you continue? There could be a monogram cigar lighter in there for you, dear." Despite her smile, Robin saw Meredith's eyes tearing up.
Yes, well, let's see what your granddad hid in this old piñata, said Jack. His gruff masculinity failed to cover his apprehension. Standing near the mummy's feet, Jack started to unwrap a heel. Rigid tendons stretched across the top of the foot and pushed against the dried, gray skin. The mummy's toes had been individually wrapped. Jack kept unraveling and allowed the path of the bandage to take him up the mummy's calf. The sleek outline of its tibia showed clearly, curving slightly with the ascent of Jack's hand. The bandage grew increasingly wide, the unwrapping moving quickly, and Jack cupped his hand underneath the mummy's knee so he could lift its thin leg and remove the dressing. Inside the dusty folds, Jack found a small key. He rubbed it with his thumb, and the bandage's grit and age fell away. "What the hell is this, Mare?" Jack said. "I don't know what it is, Jack. I didn't put it in there." It looked like a regular house key, Schlag brand, with a dab of green paint. "Mare, this is your thing, right? This whole mummy business. What the hell is it doing with this key, huh? Can you explain that?" She stammered before speaking. "There's a legend I read about stolen mummies, how their thieves get..." Jack threw his hands in the air, and Meredith quieted and retreated a step. Robin wondered if he'd ever hit her. "The hell with the legend, Mare. What's going on?" "I didn't do anything," she fought back tears. "The legend says the thieves' secrets come, that things can be found." "Oh, Jesus, shut up, Mare," said Jack. Robin wished she could run back down the narrow staircase. She looked over to Neil, who was drawing imaginary lines with his forefinger on the white tablecloth and watching through side glances the Milton's squabble. Jack shifted his accusing stare from Meredith to the mummy. He removed the key with care and appeared to be trying hard to avoid contact with the corpse's wrinkled, chalky skin. Meredith had told Robin about Jack's affairs. For Meredith, it was an accepted, though troubling, element of his persona. Jack was respectfully secretive, but sometimes he'd slip up and Meredith would find suspicious receipts or overhear cryptic phone conversations. Robin didn't understand the arrangement, but that's the way Jack and Meredith did it. Meredith knew Jack loved her and would never leave. If the key were a woman's house key, it would be against the rules, too intimate. Standing over the mummy, Jack studied the key. He looked at Meredith. She stared at him intently, as if begging him to speak, but he didn't say anything. Jack placed the key on the table next to Meredith's ring, his face suggesting the same heaviness Meredith had shown a moment before. He looked at Neil, then at Robin, and gave a snorting laugh. "I don't know what the hell a mummy is doing with this. What's going on here, Mare?" "The mummy will punish and shame its desecrators," the story said. "Shut up, please," said Jack. The room was eerily silent before Robin said, "I've got to say, Meredith, this is not at all what I expected." Her party voice again, meant to get the group back into a lighter mood. Hail now pounded the attic roof with an unrelenting beat. Robin wished for thunder, or perhaps gusts of wind, anything to disturb the steady drumming. Its constancy accentuated their silence. "Robin, why don't you have another go?" Jack said, waving a hand at her, his grin almost a sneer. Robin wondered if her manufactured pleasantness irked him. She forced a smile. "All right, Jack," she said, and moved over to the mummy's right arm. She carefully unwrapped its hand and forearm. She moved with less trepidation this time. She leaned close to the mummy, her lips pursed, her fingers working quickly. The length of bandage ended at the shoulder, and the humerus head showed clearly through the tight skin. Robin dropped the gray-brown lengths of cloth to the floor, and the four of them looked at the naked limb. "Nothing hidden on that one," Neil said. "Yes, I'm still hoping for a beautiful Egyptian ruby," Robin said. Jack's head snapped toward her, an expression of disdain, and he looked down at the body. With much of the mummy now exposed, it looked to Robin more like a gruesome dead body than a preserved artifact. "Neil?" Meredith asked, gesturing toward the mummy. Neil walked around the table to the right leg. He took hold of the bandage gingerly and began unwrapping at the ankle. Even on his second time around, the color left his face and he grew deathly pale, except for splashes of red on each cheek. "Attaboy, Neil," Jack said. Already Jack was falling back into character.
Neil flinched when the bandage yanked at the mummy's crusted knee joint, causing the whole body to jostle. The bandage ripped loose, and a puff of dust rose in the muted lamplight. "Tear it out, big boy," Jack said. Neil grabbed hold of the mummy's knee to stabilize it as he pulled at the linen. The mummified skin looked gritty, like it had been rubbed in coal. Robin thought it would help if Neil could think of the body this way. Dirt. Minerals. She wanted him to show he wasn't just a nerdy software engineer, but a red-blooded American like Jack. If he could do this, the Miltons might see that Neil was fit to sail in the Hamptons and drive a golf cart while smoking a fat cigar. She hoped they didn't notice how he squinted, the way his nose crinkled in concentration as he unearthed the next object. Pressed tightly against the thigh, Neil found a tarnished coin. He peeled it away from the mummified skin and held it in his palm. Meredith and Jack leaned in for a look. Robin was the one who, this time, inhaled deeply. Her eyes widened and she stepped back. Neil reached out to hand her the coin and she picked it off his palm as if it were about to crumble. Then she looked at it closely, inspected it the same way Meredith had examined her ring. It had been her grandfather's, dated 1783. She saw the scratch across the face of the stoic Indian, the scratch the coin dealer had said made it worth only a couple $100s. When she and Neil were just married, it was the only thing she owned of value, and she'd kept it hidden in the flip-up jewelry box in her sock drawer. Neil had just started his business and spent most of the day hunched over a computer, screwdriver in hand, in the garage. He'd come inside to eat and pontificate about his grandiose ideas and how rich they'd become, but they weren't rich. Robin had worked extra hours when she could. She clipped coupons. She bought secondhand. At night, she'd get out her grandfather's half cent and wonder how much she could get for it. Neil didn't notice their poverty until the electric company shut off the power. "Now what? I can't work," he'd said. Without telling him, she sold the coin. He didn't ask how she'd gotten the power turned back on, almost like he'd attributed it to some act of God, a turn of good fortune. Robin hadn't truly forgiven him for that, even now. She wasn't supposed to have sold the coin. In California, she told the story to her friend Margaret. It was a rags-to-riches tale that, in the West, made her endearing. It was not a story for Meredith and Jack. Robin closed her hand around the coin and reached to where her jean pocket should have been before remembering she was wearing a dress. She held the cool copper tightly. "All right," Jack said, "let's play 'em straight. That key is mine. That won't shock any of you. I can say that because, Meredith, the ring has something to do with you, though Lord knows I didn't give it to you. Robin, you got the scandalous coin. Neil, my boy, that leaves you." "Okay," Neil said. He looked down at the mummy, doubtlessly wondering where to start. "I mean, I don't know what my wife is up to here, but we might as well play along," Jack said. Meredith balled her hands into fists and straightened her arm, her knuckles white. "Jack, I didn't do a damn thing to this mummy," Meredith said. She stared at him, her eyes ready to fill with tears. Robin gazed toward the ceiling and shifted her attention to the unrelenting hail slapping against the rooftop. Everyone was silent except for a small sniffle from Meredith. Jack looked up too. His trance broke when he turned toward the sound of bandages being pulled from the withered body. Neil went to work, this time unwrapping the mummy's torso. He ripped at the body with reckless speed. Instead of propping it up to get around the back, Neil tore at pieces wrapping on the chest. "Let me help you there, Neil," Jack said, and he went over and gently held and tilted the mummy's skull. "Well, I guess this isn't going to a museum or anything," Meredith said. Given the series of inexplicable events that had transpired, the statement was mundane. She tried too hard. Neil worked crudely, and Robin wondered if it were in part by design. They'd expected squeamishness and delicacy, but wasn't he the only one tearing at the bandages for the third time? She hoped the Miltons recognized his bravado. Macho Jack, though now holding the body, had yet to peel the linens from the dead skin. The grit of the bandages, adhesive, and the skin's flaking top layer hadn't gotten under his fingernails. If Neil could only go fast enough, unwrap all of it, maybe he would find his own secret. Robin couldn't imagine what it could be, but she wanted him to have one. Something dark, sinister even, impressive. The problem was, Neil was earnest. One of his most endearing and aggravating qualities. Robin watched him, rooted for him, but no matter how sinister he looked ripping and tearing at the dead body, she couldn't help but think there was no darkness within him to uncover. The curse of which Meredith had spoken hadn't accounted for the possibility that a mummy might be desecrated by a mild-mannered engineer. Having laid bare the mummy's chest and back, Neil stopped unwrapping. Jack gently lowered the mummy so that it was flush against the table. The dried skin clung tightly to bone, leaving an elaborate outline of the rib cage. A long, stitched incision ran along the left side of the torso, and the mummy's arms and legs appeared now connected to an entire human body. Even the dead face seemed to have picked up an expression. Its hollow eyes stared, shriveled lips, shrunken gums, and crooked teeth formed an upturned smirk. "I guess there's nothing else in there, Neil," Jack said. Neil looked at Robin, then at Meredith and Jack. The Miltons each wore a gentle smile, the kind passers-by give small children. Robin regretted coming. The Bennetts should have been here instead. "There's nothing there, Neil," said Robin. Neil looked down at the body. Its skin appeared green under the room's red light, and its head seemed to have shifted on its decrepit neck. The ribs looked so small, like delicate twigs, and the skin had dried paper thin. Standing over the mummy, Neil strained his jaw to a hideous grimace, raised his fist, and drove it through the chest. The sound of cracking bone echoed off the attic's exposed beams. Dust spewed from the open cavity and billowed into the air. The odors of sawdust and mummifying salts spread with the aerated dust, and Robin covered her nose with her hand. Through the haze, she could see Neil reaching into the mummy's chest, ripping out handfuls of linens and more sawdust. "Neil, stop!" she yelled at him, but he couldn't. He tore at it foolishly. Jack grabbed his arm. "Stop! That's enough!" he said. Neil clawed clumsily at the body with his other hand before Jack subdued him by grabbing him at the elbows. "There's got to be something else in there. You all had things in there." He was almost pleading with Jack, and then he looked at Robin. "I didn't find anything." Meredith pulled out a dust-covered chair and slid it toward Neil. He sat slumped in it like a defeated boxer. His chest heaved, and his eyes focused on Robin. Dust settled around them. No one spoke, and they were again left listening to the chorus of hail, this time mixed with the sound of Neil's heavy panting. The smell of the mummy's innards permeated the room as waves of particulates drifted through Meredith's eerie lighting. Meredith dragged a metal wash tub across the floor over to the mangled body. With both hands, she grabbed a heap of linen and dumped it into the tub. Jack walked away from Neil to help. He picked bone fragments from the table and swept up sawdust with the edge of his hand. Neil watched from his chair, his heavy breathing in rhythm with a pounding outside. With the scraps piled in the basin, only the desecrated carcass remained on the table. Jack lifted it and placed it headfirst into the oval metal tub. He jammed in the skull and allowed the legs to protrude. Jack retreated a few steps to the white cloth table, picked up the key, and threw it underhand into the basin where it settled with the scraps of the mummy. "What was that anyway, Jack?" asked Meredith in an almost inaudible voice. "Do you want to tell me about that ring?" Meredith shook her head. Meredith retrieved her diamond ring from the table. She looked at it again and, like Jack, tossed it into the tub. Robin picked up her grandfather's coin and rubbed its face with her thumb. She felt the chalky residue of the mummy's body. The half-sensed sudden appearance was unnatural. She also dropped it into the tub. Neil took the white sheet from the table and laid it over the mangled body. Jack gave Neil a paternal pat on the shoulder. Shrouded in the white tablecloth, the mummy now looked like the rest of the covered artifacts littering the attic. If they were to push the wash tub against the back wall next to the discarded furniture, no one would ever notice the mummy. Meredith blew out the dancing flames of the candelabrum, then walked over to the lamp and removed the red cloth. Bright light washed over the attic, the dark corners of the room stark and conspicuous. They left after kisses on the cheek and the rounding up of jackets, and everyone pretended they would get together again.
Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's story. If you did, please leave a rating and a review. Also, please tell a friend directly. Personal recommendations help a lot. My main goal with this podcast is to grow an audience for future work, and it'd be great to connect with more odd people who like strange art. I'd love to connect on social media. You can find me on Twitter or Instagram at TheodoreCarter2 or on Facebook with the handle at ChileanSeaBlob. This story and other stories in this podcast are part of my book, The Life Story of a Chilean Sea Blob and Other Matters of Importance. The book is available wherever books are sold online, and you can find links to all of my books on my website, TheodoreCarter.com. You can also find other things there, like videos of me making a giant cement eyeball or turning traffic boxes into robots. Music from this podcast comes from TMI Management, TMIMGMT.com. Thanks again for being here, and I hope you come again.